tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome the founder and president of AEA Ribbon Mics, Mr. Wes Dooley. Wes brought some of his wonderful ribbon mics with him, and you'll hear them live in studio with Jeff on the guitar. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by our good friends at Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio, and at Guitar Hummer at guitarhummer.com. Make sure you check them both out. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. I might sound a little different because I'm using some amazing mics on my voice right now. I'm literally surrounded by a bunch of AEA mics, and they're just beautiful. I just want to thank Ronan for running the board for me today. So probably there'll be less glitches today because he's running it, not me. But anyway, Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Just wanted to mention, since we're talking about AEA Ribbon mics, I just got a video posted up where I did a shootout between six mics in AEA Ribbon mics possessions. Two of them are famous mics, one from Les Paul and one from Wally Heider. And then four of them are AA Ribbon mics. And then we, you know, have a SM57 in there as a little point of reference. So you can check that out on my YouTube channel at Selenium, or you can find it on our Facebook page.
Yes, there. And you were using your beautiful Martin. That's a great guitar. Well, just want to mention that.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, I had to bring in something nice for all these nice mics. I mean, couldn't slouch with something, you know.
That's true.
But what have you been up to, Jeff?
I pulled this guitar out. I'm going to be playing it in a minute. It's a Giannini Craviola. We'll post some pictures of it tonight on the Flow Guitar Facebook page. But anyway, this guitar I got a while ago in the 70s, and it's a solid spruce top, solid matched rosewood straight from Brazil. It's true Brazilian rosewood. Anyway, you're going to hear it. It's got a really tinkly high end to it, like a Martin, and I brought one of my Martins in. Meanwhile, my other Martin is right now on the Guitar Hummer. It's humming away. It's been on there for about 2.5 weeks. So I'm going to give it about another 2 weeks or so, and it's supposed to see if it's going to break in. And then we'll bring it back in and we'll try it and see if it sounds any different.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention that if you guys want to call in and ask Wes a question, you can dial 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, or you can join us on our live chat room at www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. So before we bring Wes in, let's take a quick break and we'll play a Guitar Hummer spot.
There's a product out called Guitar Hummer that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to guitarhummer.com for more information or to purchase.
All right, well, I just want to introduce our guest tonight, Mr. Wes Dooley. Wes, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
We're honored to have you in. So much, you know, so much history with you, and the mics that you guys produce are amazing. So we just can't wait to get into them and start talking about them. But first, let's just talk about what got you into creating ribbon mics and what inspired you to go there.
Well, I got into ribbon mics because of my very early people who are willing to talk to an ignorant young guy. And they Wally Heider, who I met over at the Ice House where I ran sound some of the time and recorded for my radio show there, the Troubadour, the Ashgrove. Wally, I noticed, used ribbon mics. Now, I was modern. I had a 47 and a pair of 67s. And then I got way too modern. At some point, I sold those so I could buy the newest, obviously best because it's newest, FET mics from Neumann, 87s and 84s and 86s. Well, the 84s and the 86s were pretty good. The 84s were very good. The 87 was never as nice sounding as my 67s. But when I went back to talk to the Ivan Kruglak at ID Sound and said, can I buy my mics back? Ivan was a Kiwi and he listened to stuff. And he knew what he was doing. He said, no, I bought them fair and square. And so I started paying attention to what the old guys really liked. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I saw as a consistent pattern was they liked the old RCA ribbons. So in 76, when GE bought RCA and got rid of everything that didn't make a lot of money, you know, manufacturing of televisions, manufacturing of broadcast stations, manufacturing of ribbon microphones, and fired the guys who checked the broadcast before they went on the air because they went, well, do I have to give back money to anybody if there's a glitch on the air? No. Well, we don't need these guys like Scott sitting here checking everything out. We can save that money. And our chief engineer was good friends with some of the RCA guys. One of them was good enough to show me how to put new ribbons in down in his basement, John Sank, who'd been there from 60 to 76 when they shut down. Mm-hmm. And so in 76, we started servicing RCA ribbon mics. 98. We started going 100% spare parts and issued the RCA 44, our favorite.
Yeah, it's a beautiful. We have one here, actually. We should have Jeff play a little something off of it.
Yeah, the what you're hearing from me is all ribbon mics here.
And if you hear a lot of bass, you're listening to a 44.
Let everybody know I'm playing a Martin. It's a DXM. It's one of their lower models, but it just sounds great. It's all laminate and it's using laminated wood on it. But it's, listen to the sound.
Beautiful. So Jeff, why don't you play us like just a one of your? I know you do like a finger picking thing. Why don't you play a finger picking through that hole? Nice little mic. So you guys have, what is it, about four different models of the 44s, right?
Well, we started with the 44, mm-hmm. and people said, are you going to hot rod it? You know, are you going to make it better? And I said, no, I'll be real happy if I can make it as good. And in fact, the first time it was tried out, they were redoing the score for Psycho down at Fox Scoring, and it was put up along with three other 44s on trios of string basses. And at the end of it, Sean Murphy, who was the engineer and is also John Williams' engineer, said, that's the only mic I've ever heard that's a reissue that sounds like the original other than the Neumann U67s made from new old stock parts. And he ordered the first pair. Mm-hmm. And another scoring engineer ordered the second pair and asked for high output. And we started hot rodding them.
Is that your 44 CX?
That's the X motor, yes. Mm-hmm. And that was, he was doing a what turned out to be Lord of the Rings, three different movies, and he wanted something for strings left, strings right, that he had up almost as high in the mix as the three Neumann M50s on the Decatur, because wow. they wanted a totally different sound. The composer said, I want it to sound like these scores have been missing for thousands of years, and we just found this old case and pulled it out, and now they're playing it for the first time.
Wow. It's a great little mic. And
One mention of that, if you want to really hear that sound to die for, listen to George Benson's Breezin', though, especially the opening strings. Those were the 44s. I remember reading about that. And it's just smooth. And I wanted to ask you about that, too, because I know that a lot of cardioid mics, they have like a, especially like the SM57, they have a little peak, like usually in the upper mids. Ribbons, I was always taught, were really flat. Is that correct? Am I wrong? Or is that they have a really good flat response?
Well, ribbons can have a really flat response. Pretty much any mic can be made to have a pretty flat response. The key things are that a condenser microphone is a high-tuned system. It's stretched very tight like a drum head, and that's why it has that extra tss at the top end. And sometimes that's a nice feature. And with some vocalists especially, where the sibilants, which are pretty coherent, happen to land on one of those high Q peaks, it's really obnoxious and you try to change the mic as fast as you can. A high-tuned system like that is most linear below resonance, and inherently those microphones want to be omnidirectional. And anything else you do with it, you worked hard to get there. A ribbon is a low-tuned system, and since we have pretty much the biggest ribbons currently made, 2.35 inches long, we call them big ribbons as a series, and we tune them down to 16.5 hertz. And a low-tuned system like that is most linear above resonance. And we tune them up as high as 16.5 hertz because we want to be flat down to 20. But since they still sound good down to 12 hertz, if somebody sneezes into one or opens it up outside in the breeze, you want it, even if it's stretched some, to last. Because we know some mics at Abbey Road, there's some 1935 Bloom Lines that have the original ribbon in them, get used every week. They're the same ribbon from 1935. So inherently, there's nothing with a ribbon that's going to cause it grief, although big ribbons like to be stored vertically, and I only know one case where I specifically know what happened. At RCA, they had some 1930s, early 30s mics at the duplicating plant, and a tech at Sweetwater mm-hmm. wound up with them, and they had been stored up high and flat. And the old guys had always told me, keep the mics vertical. But this is the first time they'd been stored for decades that way. And the tech who does keyboard stuff there said, well, I opened them up to see why they didn't sound right, and the ribbons were sagging. So he just stretched them tighter, because that particular one, like the old BBC AXBT, has provisions for being able to stretch the ribbon mm-hmm. fairly easily, and tightened them up, and started using them for community theater stuff.
Wow.
Is it hard to stretch these, or is it fairly easy on your mics to do that? Or do you have to take it in and have somebody do it?
Our mics, other than the 44 series, are all ones where it's really good detail handwork. And since they're 80 millionths of an inch thick, you want to have some experience, although there's a really wonderful story. I know a guy walked in when he was 13 to KPFA, KPFB, Berkeley, and said, do you have anything technical I could do, to the chief engineer? And the guy said, your hands are steady, your eyes look good. Yeah, here's an old RCA 44. See, you shake it, And see how this ribbon, the resonance? Yeah. And look at this one. See how flabby that is? And I got spare ribbons. Why don't you try to put new ribbons in these, kid? And David did, and that got him into an entire career. That's still what he does, is works on designing microphones.
Now, talking earlier about how, you know, how some mics have that kind of that high frequency that you don't like, you know, when I did the shootout, I used an SM57. It kind of showed that off a little bit. And we talked about how you, mixing the SM57 with the 44 is kind of a little magical sequence.
Well, it's a really nice thing to be able to do because an SM57 is an absolutely standard sound. Mm-hmm. And it's a reference. It is not something anybody will ever mistake for reality. As a wonderful guitarist, Dick Rosmini once said, it always sounds like it's coming through a PA system. But it is a very useful microphone. And that's the third type of microphone. They aren't low-tuned. They aren't high-tuned. What the guy who designed that microphone, he spent a lot of time getting several different resonances in there so that the overall result was pretty flat. And it was an amazing piece of pragmatic design. His daughter told me he just kept going back and working on it, working on it, and working on it till he got something. It was a really good set of compromises.
Well, actually, we have a clip here that it's from a YouTube video. This is one where I did special where I mixed the Wally Heider mic with the SM57. So clip number two. So that's the sound when you have both of them mixed together. It's a very nice little sound. Has a little bit of the jangle on top.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's nice.
Those 57s, Jeff Emmerich, the engineer for the Beatles, he uses those, or he did use those all the time, almost on everything.
Well, when they came out, I know that Wally Heider, the predecessors to the SM57, he really was excited about because we were starting to do lots of tracks on these trucks that he was doing. And you needed more mics. And the essence of mics, as far as he was concerned, was where you put them.
Right.
Because positioning was, when I met him at the Ice House and he was doing Jackie DeShannon, positioning was the trick. That's what you did as an engineer, was positioned mics. And he just felt that the stuff Shure was doing that got to in the 60s, the late 60s, the SM57, was really useful.
Yeah.
And over at Ocean Way Recording, Alan Zides, when I first gave him one of our 44s to try, came back with, did you know if you put that up on a guitar cab with an SM57 and mix it 50-50, it's perfect. He thought it was the best he'd heard.
Yep. It's a nice little sound, for sure. Now Jeff has pulled out his 12-string, so let's see here. We've got, let's do one more quick with the 44 on the 12 string. Let's hear what that sounds like.
Full sound. Now, I also, too, because we don't have a lot of room, we're not optimally placing these mics, though they're picking up pretty well. I mean, I know you were saying placement's important too, but should we try this one?
Well, yeah. Well, I was going to say we could go to the 84, but let's talk about the N22, which is the new mic, which works for voice and
that's
and
the one
guitar,
I'm talking through.
Everything, pretty much. So, tell us about the N22, the Nuvo series mic. What problems were you trying to solve when you created that?
Well, as I said, I got into this because I was really involved in folk music, and I was a recording engineer, not a musician. I had a bunch of friends in high school who were musicians, and I thought the world of them. And then I found that if you just walked in and volunteered at the Pomona College Station, as the saying was 2 weeks ago, I couldn't spell engineer, now I are one. And playing the records was kind of fun, but going out and actually recording live, and I hustled hard and took time off from school and worked and got an Ampex machine and got some the U-47 and the 67s and started recording my own shows. Mm-hmm. First thing I did was kind of like an SM-57 recording. It was a Electrovoice 664, which was kind of the mic of choice earlier. Mm-hmm. And it was the Clancy Brothers with Tommy Makem after hours at the Troubadour. And, of course, I had one roll of tape at that time, so that later became Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, Lightning Hopkins. I now tell people, record everything, as Wally Heider said, from the moment the musicians walk in to the moment there's no musicians in the room.
Yeah.
And keep good notes so you can find it again.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays with the portable recorders, and there's no excuse not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I remember doing sessions where the players were warming up, and there was a session with Alex Acuna and Abe Laboriel, and they're jammed. They didn't roll tape, but it was one of the most amazing. It was way better than the album. I mean, it was really cool what they were doing, but lost forever.
Magic happens when it happens.
Yeah, that's true. Do you want me to try playing through this one? I can.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, well, before you start playing it, maybe we'll have Ronan adjust it so it's more optimal for your guitar there. But can you tell us, Wes, you know, what did you guys do with this mic to allow so that you can use this in multiple applications for everything from a guitar cabinet to voice, and you can be right up close on it without really ruining the ribbon or anything like that?
Well, to start with, there was just the basic aspect of what RCA had done. They had made mics that would do everything. Because this was a period where you didn't have many mics, you look at what a big band was recorded with when you see the long shot being pulled out. So you go from these are movie clips and such where the early optical recording was done. And you see the girl singing, and then it pulls out, and you see there's, you know, some band members around her, and then you pull out farther, and you see everybody. And when you look, you also see the microphones. And some of those had as many as 3 microphones.
Wow.
These guys were rich. So this was done in a time where, Dave Gold, who had Gold Star, started that in the 50s, he said he had when they opened, 144 and 3 Veracoustics. And the Veracoustics wound up in the echo chambers eventually, but the 44 stayed out front and center because he said the thing that saved his ass is a friend of his showed him how to record up to a 10-piece group. This is all mono, of course, with a single 44.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's just a ton of what you heard in the 50s and in the 40s. And you heard it on things that you wouldn't think of, like it was the standard kick drum mic for pop stuff at Capitol from the early, well, I think they stopped in the early 70s, and they started in the late 30s doing it that way. They would take the front skin off, put a 25-pound sandbag down, put a towel on top of that so your microphone wouldn't grab any of the magnetic iron that's always in sand, and lay it down on top of that. And that was the kick drum sound on everything because that was the standard. That, you know, it was a factory, kind of like the approach that Motown would take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything was done the same.
with a good room, these 44s. I was telling before in the before we had the show, I was telling Wes I had done this session at the old RCA studios. This was the one where Frank Sinatra and Lawrence Welk had recorded direct to lathe back in the old days. And we had done with the drums, he had actually put a mic next to the snare and the kick drum, but he never used it. He had two RCAs with the original tube preamps, and they were about 10 or 12 feet away from the drums, and it just got the whole thing. But the room was, it was tuned right. It was a great sounding room. It was amazing because it just got that, it got everything, and it was perfect. I mean, it was one of the best drum sounds I've ever heard. Okay, we're adjusting some of the mics here.
Oh, I'm having so much fun adjusting microphones.
Okay, but anyway, so yeah, it was these RCAs were used a lot for ambience, and also too, they're really good for when you do the trick they used to do for Led Zeppelin, where you had the 57 up close to the cabinet. You had another mic like a U87 for the about 6 feet away, and then you had one of the ribbons like the 44 about 16 feet away, and they would mix that, and that's how they get that huge guitar sound, especially like with a Marshall or something like that.
What we did here, I think, is change microphones on the announce.
Yeah.
Did we do that?
Okay. Can you hear the difference?
What we're talking to, he's talking into an 84, which
yes.
We put up.
Oh, there you go. Listen how clear that is.
Yeah. You've got a nice radio voice now, Jeff.
Welcome to the Flow Guitar. No, sorry.
Right.
But anyway, the... So I'm going to go ahead and use this one. Should I use this?
No,
one?
No. You'll play the guitar.
You'll play
the
into
N22,
that. We just changed here.
Okay. Now, while they're setting up this mic, this guitar is a Giannini Craviola. It's kind of a lute-shaped type of a 12-string, and it just has a real bright, tinkly sound. I use this a lot for sessions for that real that kind of chimey. It's very bright, kind of Martin-ish, and really light gauge strings, and I'm using a real light pick, so I'm not really pushing the strings that much, so it's got a nice tinkly sound. So, like... So it's really nice.
Very nice.
What we've done here is set it up. We were listening to the N22.
Yeah.
And yeah. We've set it up so that the 44 is in a position. You should try to describe where the M22 is and where the 44 is, because we can do a little bit of that with just the 44.
Now, I'm holding the guitar up almost like a classical position, even though I'm not really set up for that. So the guitar is up on my above my like on my chest, and Scott's taking pictures, so you'll be able to see this on the Facebook page and on his video page. So this guitar, this pickup right now, the N series one, is up near my the top of my fretboard, close to the sound hole, and I'm about 8 inches away from it. So it's getting the string really close. And it's still getting the high end. Now, I'm making it chimier because I'm using the light pick, and also I'm playing close to the bridge. So it gets that sound. And then if I go closer to the neck, it's a much deeper, richer sound. So now, this mic...
The one you're using for announce is the 84. I don't have that set up to record at the moment. You should probably switch over to the 44 for a moment and just run a little bit of the
44 while he's switching it. The 44 is closer to the bridge, and it's about 12 inches away, and it's pointing towards the sound hole. Is that that's the 44? So I'm playing closer to the bridge. Now I'm going to go over towards the neck. It's got a much richer low end to it, but it's smooth. It's not, I'm not hearing any peaks in the low end. It's a pretty smooth frequency response.
Those mics go flat down to 20 hertz at a distance, which is why you could use them on something like, there's a wonderful recording of the Dallas Symphony doing the Firebird that was recorded with just a pair of 44s.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of just wonderful stuff done where you really feel that visceral. And I happen to like bass a lot, but it's the thing that with a ribbon has to be tamed some, because the ribbon is the element in a directional mic. You have a little less of that when it's half and half omni and figure eight, but the ribbon is the native figure eight element. And so it's what causes you to have proximity effect, and why I like to get pretty close to my microphones when I'm announcing.
You're in that FM mode.
Right. I sometimes would have girls would call and I'd have coffee with them afterwards, and they'd say, "Well, why don't you sound like you do on the air?" And I said, "You need your ear to be closer to my mouth."
Nice. But these because I've noticed when using cardioids and tracking with cardioids on guitars, they have, you know, peaks, there's frequency peaks in them. They're just not smooth. And that's one of the advantages I was always told of the ribbon is it's smooth. That 44 is every, you know. So I'm going all the way up and down the frequency range and getting all the harmonics, and it's smooth. Really rich and smooth. It's the frequency response is amazing. These are just so smooth.
The other thing that's kind of interesting about how you're set up is that since the 84, the null is to a large degree towards your guitar, you can mix and have more guitar with the mic that's set to that, or you can go to your vocal mic, or mm-hmm. your announce mic in this case, and you can have really good nulls. And one of the things that's really nice about using a pair of figure eights on someone who's singing and playing guitar is you can have quite a bit of isolation between the two mics.
Yes, yes. Well, I've seen people use the figure eight with two voices, like background singers on the opposite sides of them, to use it that way to get it. But this is... let's try the 44 and mix with the one I'm using. Just see if you can play with the faders and move them in and around, and I'll just keep playing and see if you can hear the difference.
Well, we should take a quick break here, and then we'll come back. And so we're talking about the figure eight pattern. Well, we should talk about one of the AA mics that's unidirectional for a ribbon mic. It's pretty unusual. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Oh. Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Today, Sweetwater and the Flow welcome Wes Dooley, founder and president of AEA Microphones. For those of you not familiar with AEA, they're a microphone company that specializes in ribbon microphones, reminiscent of classic designs like the RCA 44. The nice thing about ribbon microphones, AEA's in particular, is the smooth roll-off on the top end that allows for a vintage-y vibe on things like vocals, electric and acoustic guitars, and other string sources. Sweetwater's had the pleasure of hosting Wes Dooley a number of times, and every time he's here, he's just a joy to have. Very knowledgeable individual that I'm sure you'll get a lot out of today. Again, I'm Aaron Raby at Sweetwater. Thanks for having us.
Want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hola, amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching The Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
Very nice.
Now I'm using the back to the Martin.
Yeah, he's back to the Martin now. So most ribbon mics are figure eight patterns. One of the mics you make is a KU4, and that's based off of an RCA mic also, correct?
That's based on the KU3A, which is the last of the ones that RCA Photophone, the movie division, made for dialogue recording. It was a post-war design, better magnets, and they went to the sort of approach that the RCA 77 D and DX had, and they made it a single pattern. Because the RCA 77's no two sounded alike, and there's a bunch of things you can adjust. It's really fun, but getting the same place a second time or getting two mics to sound the same is just... pretty random.
So those were unidirectional mics.
Were mics that were designed so they could be anything from a figure eight to an Omni.
Okay.
Now,
oh, wow.
Ribbons sound best as figure eights. That's their native mode, just like condenser mics sound best as pressure Omnis. That's their native mode. And you get the absolute most performance for the money. So we started our first mic with the 44. We do variants on that, everything up to phantom-powered, super quiet for classical work down and paying attention to the reverb tails, something like Day in the Life, that last chord mm-hmm. that just rings forever. That mic will do that. And then we make versions like the one we're doing here with you, which is the exact same guts as the ribbons we do that cost more money, but has a whole lot less handwork on it mm-hmm. because RCA made a beautiful microphone with a radio finish for about 2 years, and it was so much work that they stopped making it and came out with a much plainer TV finish, one that didn't reflect things and didn't have plating. And we make both finishes. We understand why RCA wanted to get out of making the radio finish. My wife periodically says, why do we have to make this? And I say, because it's drop-dead gorgeous, beautiful.
It is.
And some people like Eddie Van Halen own four of them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they have his logo on them. He said it was the only mic when he decided to teach himself to record at 5150. And his brother, Alex, plays the drums there every day. He put the mics up and would walk back and forth from the studio to the control room. And he said it was the only mic that when you stood in the studio and then you opened the fader, it just sounded the same. And it's a lot easier to teach yourself to record if the microphone sounds a lot like being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't have, the less EQ, the better, especially with orchestra.
Yeah. Well, so I have a clip here of the KU4, and then I'll tell you a little story about when we were recording this about that mic. So what was really cool about that mic when we were recording with that, Sammy, Wes's assistant, was there helping me record. And so I would walk over and I would start the camera. And I'd start the camera. I'd be dead silent. You couldn't hear it. Like, it was there was no mic in the room. And then I walk right in this little tiny area, you know, this magical spot. And then bam, all of a sudden this boomy sound coming out of it. It was amazing how that mic worked. I've never heard one that silent when you're behind it like that one is.
Well, that's the essence of the engineer's craft, as I was told by Wally Heider, is find the right mic, put it in the right place, have a nice environment for musicians, get out of the way. Mm-hmm. Now, he also had another comment, which is, if it didn't sound good in the monitor, stop the session and fix it right now, because it will never be easier to fix it. He was not a big fan of fix it and they mix. And that sort of attitude was why we wound up with our fix it in the mic series.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the more you can, if you can print it right, there's less problems later. I mean, I know in home studio, recording in home studios, I used a lot more EQ and stuff because the room didn't sound good. I wasn't using, you know, I was using cheaper mics and stuff. So you had to compensate, but that's true. If you could get that sound, it was there. You got it. You're home. You know what I mean? You're done.
Well, yeah. The one thing we should mention, though, with the N22 and the 84 are fairly reasonable and affordable mics, and they sound fantastic, actually. And actually, the one we have here, you can pick up. It's a limited edition. I think there's only 125 of them made, but it's a beautiful little mic. But it's really affordable for a ribbon mic.
Yeah. All of these mics are just, they're beautiful. They're amazing, amazing mics. But I noticed when you recorded that with the unidirectional, the inner voices of the strings in this area, like if I'm in here, this sound with the regular mic, it's kind of a general full sound. But I noticed that the middle strings that he was playing just came right out. It just cut. And as in thinking of recording for an album or something like that, if you're finger picking or something like that, it just punched. It was in the mix. You didn't have to EQ it to bring it out. You know what I mean? If you're doing something, now even here, let's try this mic. Give me this mic.
The
N22.
You're getting the RCA, the 44 that we were listening to before, is I'm so close to it, it's booming a little bit too much. But this one here, it's flat. Let me take the pick out of my mouth. It's flat. But when Scott was playing with the other mic, those inner voices, it kind of had a little bit of a punch to it. Let's try the 44 again. He's doing something over here. Now, Wes pulled the mic farther back, and he's using his hat on the other side of the figure eight pattern to absorb the sound so it's not hitting the wall, or getting the wall.
Is that there's a flat, hard wall, and that's not necessarily what you want to listen to. I can remove my hat. Now you'll hear the flat, hard wall, perhaps. And I happen to have my top hat with me, which is a felt hat. And I just went, oh, okay, it's a nice diffuser. It's a round shape. You know, let's just put it in there and see if it makes any difference. I don't actually know whether it makes a theoretical difference or a real difference. But there it is.
It's a little bit. It's taking a little of the bottom end out a little bit. It's sounding. I'm hearing the middle voices. That deep G is.
What I also did was move the mic back about 6 inches, because if you want proximity effect, you know, this is okay for proximity effect, but the king of proximity effect is a 44. And I will get up and announce right on top of them sometimes because it's so much fun.
It's a nice intimate sound. I'm finger picking on this guy.
Right, and here I am right at the backside of the microphone. Now, I get really close and I start to have some bass. And I move myself back a little ways and I have less bass.
Yeah, I tell you, that 44 really makes that Martin sound like a Martin.
Yeah, no, that's the sound.
Yeah.
I mean, Martins are Martins, but with that mic, it's a great sound.
See, that Martin that Jeff is playing, it's like a $400 Martin.
Yeah, it's a DXM.
So you save your money on the guitar and buy the high quality mic, and then you can use it for everything else.
Yeah, but I guarantee you, if I used your D45 on here, it would sound even better.
Well, yeah.
But this guitar is a great little guitar. It was a good buy.
I was lucky enough to have a $250,000 1927 Martin in my lap a couple of years ago. Because Martin, in conjunction with Fishman, was doing a bunch of sampling of how did the mics, they were recording them for posterity and for developing a series of guitars that you could dial in that you wanted this sound or that sound. And we had a bunch of our microphones. Some of you saw the KU4 and the A440 and such in the ads last couple of years that Martin ran.
Oh, that's what that
those Aura, were some of our microphones. Yeah.
The Aura 1. So you,
it's the Aura Plus, I think is what they call it, but it's what do they call that series for Martin? I don't know.
It's the Heritage series or something like
that. No, it's not the Heritage, but it, yeah.
There's a D18, a D28, and a D45, and you have that Aura Plus sample or algorithm of the pre-war Martin D45 and a herringbone D28. So now what I'm curious about is if you buy another Martin with an Aura, can you put that in so you get the D45?
Don't know, but I do know that like many things, you know, if you want it to sound like, an old RCA recording, well, you know, RCA was using RCA microphones. And especially places like Nashville. So if you want it to sound like Chet Atkins playing, as one guy who took one of our mics back to Chet Atkins Appreciation Days in Nashville one time, and everybody went, well, that sounds right. And he went, yeah. You know, when you put the mic up in front, another friend who has a Gibson 400 said, I bought it because it had this wonderful tone and all these big band things. But even though he had done over 1,000 pieces for television, Chris Stone said he never got the sound until I loaned him a 44. And then suddenly he said, that was it. They put a 44 in front of that, and that's how you get that sound.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And the Grand Ole Opry, that was 144 for decades, just out at the front edge of the stage. And that was, you played out there because the Ryman doesn't like to be overloaded with sound. It's a great acoustical room with a lot of PA running. It's less exciting than with something that's...
Yeah.
And I went there and caught a concert where when they finished up with the big band, everybody came back for Norah Jones to do some other things, and they had one mic at the front, and they all just went up to the mic. And I just relaxed and went, okay, this is what I came for. This is what the Ryman really sounds like. It was made for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the room acoustically, you didn't need the reinforcement. It was designed to project the sound. And even with the orchestra, when they were doing the movie soundtracks, you were talking about the Decca-Tree, which was a pattern of where they mounted the mics.
Three microphones, one forward, two to the side. Typically about, the mics are 4 feet apart for the two side ones, and the forward one is in the same plane and about 2 feet forward, sometimes as far as 2 meters apart and 1 meter forward. Now, there's all sorts of individual choices in the rooms and where you put it. Typically about 11 and a half feet above the conductor.
And thousands of recordings from all over the world were done, the orchestra recordings. A lot of the classical stuff, that's all they used was three mics. They didn't need, I mean, now like for scores and even newer classical recordings, they do a lot of close miking, so they have it. But a lot of times they necessarily don't need it with that tree and the right types of mics, especially like these 44s. It catches everything. You don't need it. And the conductor balances the orchestra, and it's there. The sound
is there.
That's
the whole point.
Well, we're coming actually to the end of our show. Wes, before we go, can you tell everyone how they can find out more about AAA Mics?
Well, you can go to Ribbon Mics, RIBBONMICS.com. And like a boat, we throw money at it whenever we have it.
And also WesDooley.com. I saw that site.
WesDooley.com was where I started with because I do a whole lot of things other than Ribbon Mics. But at this point, I'm getting old enough that my favorite is to do Ribbon Mics. And so that's my focus. And eventually I'll split the two sites into different.
Now, you mentioned something about there was some event that was happening.
Yeah, he's got an event coming up on Wednesday, actually, a Meet the Maker. Where's that at? It's here in Los Angeles somewhere.
Yeah, it's down by Dodger Stadium on Sunset at Vintage King's LA office.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the Vintage King website and look it up, I'm hoping you can still register for that. We'll bring some drinks down and some chips and such, guacamole. And for a couple hours, we'll just play with some of the stuff. One of our guys who's a major factor in doing the N22 work, the singer-songwriter mic that we started out with here, which is our $899 tribute to how much can we do to pay back the people who've given us so much pleasure over the years. And we want something that would plug in to a Phantom-powered, relatively inexpensive preamp USB recorder. We wanted something that was sturdy enough that you could use it for decades. We wanted something that sonically was more like an instrument than a microphone, that, you know, if your kid was interested in what you were doing, the kid wants the microphone. Mm-hmm. You know, just like they want your double aught 18. I have a 64 double aught 18, and my son has it in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going someplace else.
Well, everybody out there, if you get a chance, you should go. If a store has these in stock, go in there and test them. You got to hear these things. Bring a guitar that you're familiar with, that you really like the sound, and listen to them, because there's a reason why these are used on recordings. The sound of them is just incredible. So I recommend that you really experiment and listen to these things and try them, because they're great mics.
And you can pick them up from Sweetwater, too.
Yes, Sweetwater has these, too.
Our first in stock.
So they've got them, and they've even got that limited edition one, so you can pick that up, too. So, and in the meantime, you can also season your guitar with Guitar Hummer. So it all sounds good, so you can then record it with that ribbon mic. So next week, we'll have Pat Quilter from Quilter Labs.
What a treat that is.
Yeah, he will be bringing in some amps with him. And he said, as he mentioned, just a couple other little toys with him. So who knows what he'll bring with him, but should be a lot of fun. He'll hopefully bring his lap steel and play a little bit for us, too. So before we go out, we're going to have Jeff play us something here on the 12 string, and he's going to take us out.
I'm going to noodle around. And Ronan, I'm going to dig into this guitar a little bit, so be warned with my levels.